Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to Tennis Connected Studios for August 19th, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the Western and Southern Open. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. If you haven't already, make sure to hit them up for ticket packages for next week's U.S. Open. Let's introduce our co-host for this week, Parsa. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well. How's it going?
It's going well, man. I'm pumped. We got basically the U.S. Open series is complete. I know we got a couple of smaller events in Winston-Salem and Connecticut next week, starting tomorrow, actually, maybe even today with some first-round matches. And then, you know, New York, NYC, U.S. Open, final major of the season taking place starting next Monday. Couldn't be more excited. Happy to get down to New York on Saturday. Spend some time with you guys and then, you know, fire up the first major of the year and be down there for a good 11, 12 days and see how that goes. So, Parsa, what were your thoughts on Cincy, man? I thought it was a pretty good event. I mean, first and foremost, let's give some credit to Cincy as an overall tournament because, I mean, they're doing an amazing job there. That looks like, you know, an ultra-professional event that they're running there. Top-notch. They're doing some serious renos. Players love it. It's not a very typical place where you would think that tennis would thrive. But, I mean, lo and behold, you know what I mean? You got Mason, Ohio. But the players love it, man. And they've made, for me, if you're looking at, and again, this is a guy talking from Toronto. I got a Masters 1000 in my backyard over here. But for me, after Indian Wells, I would definitely say that Cincy is the best hard court Masters 1000 in the world. Better than Miami. Now, Miami's got a chance to do some serious damage next year in the Dolphin Stadium. We'll see what they do with James Blake. And then, obviously, Toronto. Let's see if they'll do some upgrades. I'm not sure what they're looking at. But Cincy right now, I mean, you can't really compete with Larry Ellison. I mean, the guy is just, you know, he's at another level with his cash flow and his, you know, his dreams and all that stuff. But basically cash. And he can just, he's buying everything out there and doing some great stuff.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, but I think for me, Cincy just looks like, I mean, they could almost, I mean, they're not going to host a slam, but it looks like that type of a field. It's a dual event and, you know, just so much stuff happening and beautiful facilities. And so kudos to
it. It's not like slam size. I've actually been there before.
Yeah. I remember.
And it's festive like the Open, just on a mini scale.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas like if you leave at the National Tennis Center in New York, it like takes you 20 minutes to clear the traffic and people honking and craziness. And there it's like, you know, it's like a 3 minute line getting out and you're out. And, the food court there is a hustling and bustling, but you move, you know, 100 yards or 100 meters one way or the other way. And it's completely desolate and no one's around. So it's an interesting tournament in that the energy is amazing. The people are really into it and the hospitality is incredible and off the charts. And it is a very wonderful tournament. I wish they'd slow it up a little bit, Nima. What would you think it'd be like if they slowed the court surface?
I wish that to be quite honest with you, I hope that they don't do that because I like a fast hard court. I mean, I think that it allows a guy like Nick Kyrgios, played some cool tennis, man. I mean, he's serving 138 mile an hour, second serves against Kudla down match point, out wide, flat. I mean, I think that it just allows, because we have so much slow tennis and we have a guy like Nadal just dominating the clay for 6-7 weeks, you know, in spring. And I like it. I like to have that parity with some different stuff happening throughout the season. I think it's okay. I mean, and I think, you know, Parsa, at the end of the day, who's winning these tournaments still? It's still Federer, Nadal, or Djokovic, man. You know what I'm saying? And I was saying this after all of these years, after Zverev, and all, I mean, yeah, I know Zverev's won a couple of these, so you got to give him credit for that, but he's certainly not dominating, and he lost his first match here, and he did nothing in Toronto, really. And then you have, yeah, I mean, TFO starting to come up, Shapovalov, he lost to Milos, and then Milos just played like garbage against Djokovic. That was one of the couple of the worst volleys I've ever seen him hit match on match point. Like, you hit the ball right back to him. What are you doing, right? Like, you got to call it what it is. And I just feel that, yeah, I mean, but these guys are still doing it. Nadal won last week. Djokovic won this week. And I would be absolutely shocked if, on the men's side, if Nadal, Djokovic, and somehow Federer, I don't know how he's going to do it. I don't think he can do it. Doesn't win the U.S. Open. Nobody else is winning that tournament. I would be absolutely
shocked. What about Kevin Anderson?
Absolutely, he cannot win the tournament. Unless all the other guys are on the same half of the draw, which won't happen, right? Because Fed and Nadal go 1 and 2. And then,
what about Juan Martín Del Potro?
I don't think so, man, because I think that it really depends with him because he's such an interesting guy. I love him. You know, he's such a, like, he's got the, like, the giraffe vibe. You know what I'm saying? He's got the long limbs and he kind of, you know, lumbers around the court and you don't know what he's really, like, feeling. And then he'll start hammering some forehands. And he just has that persona that he's very endearing and everything, but I don't know, man. It's tough to win because then he went back to the slice this week, which is kind of what you like. And then he lost to Goffin, and then he lost to Goffin 6-6, and then Goffin had to retire against Federer. So it's like, what's going on exactly? I don't really have a read. I mean, he made the finals of Los Cabos, didn't play Toronto, and made quarters in Cincy. So not bad, right? Overall, the two tournaments that he played.
So the key is that does everyone have to listen to the preview show to hear you say that Nick Kyrgios is going to win the 2018 U.S. Open?
That's 100% not going to happen. I would be surprised if
he... finally. I think that would be the first slam in like 8.
Yeah, yeah. No, I would love to see it. Don't get me wrong. And I think, believe me, man, a lot of people would also be excited about it because when he plays, people are there watching. And that's the bottom line. Because, listen, man, like if you want to get entertained, right now, one of the guys... I'm telling you, man, and I'm being honest with everybody out there because that's how we like to do it here, but I can't really sit through too many matches without changing. Like, if I'm watching our tennis TV app, I might close it, go on social, check an email, then come back. But if Kyrgios is playing, pretty much watching the whole match because I want to see what the guy does next. Is he going
to
serve?
You don't want to miss it.
Is he going to hit 138 mile an hour serve? Is he going to start talking to the crowd? Is he going to just, for whatever reason... I mean, he had this really interesting exchange with Ali Neely when he was playing Del Potro, and they made a couple bad calls on the baseline, and he was like, you guys have to understand that these calls that you make are costing players hundreds of thousands of dollars. He was getting really emotional, and he's like, we're not out here playing for free, and now he all of a sudden cares about his career, and then you know what I'm saying? And then he's playing against, I don't know who he was playing before that, but, Borna Coric. He beat him in the previous round, which was another good match for a couple sets anyways. And then he was like, you know, George takes his time a little bit between serves. And he was like, I'm so bored right now. He drops the second set 6-0. And then he storms back and he wins the third set. And it's just like you never know what you're going to get there. But with Nadal, you know what you're going to get. It's just a grind all the way through. With Federer, you're going to get some brilliance. There's no tilting the scale. You know what I mean? It's an even keel of emotions and...
why everyone watched McEnroe.
Exactly.
Right?
So that's why, and that's why I've always said that if you had a guy like Kyrgios as number one, I think tennis would be a lot healthier than it is. That's just my honest opinion. But anyways, we're getting off track a little bit here. But I think that
Nima liking the bad boys, man.
Yeah, I think that, you know, getting back to today's action. Let's before we break down the men's. The men's field with Djokovic, I mean, he's the master of the masters now. He's got all 9, which is absolutely incredible. Remains to be seen if it ever happens again. It might, but it's very far away from happening because I don't think Federer is going to do it and I don't think Nadal is going to do it. And those are the two closest guys. And then everybody else is super far away. But anyways, getting to the women's for a second, we had Kiki Bertens, you know, Drake inspired with the lyrics, defeating Simona Halep. In 3 sets to win the biggest title of her career. We've talked about her in previous shows. She's had a pretty good year, right? Made it like 2 or 3 finals. She defeats Halep For me, it was interesting because I was going back and forth with a couple of people today, private messages and whatnot. And, you know, even if Halep wins this tournament, does that mean that she's the U.S. Open favorite? I don't think so, to be honest with you. Because she's just, she has that, you know, she's, can we call her the new Justine Henin? I'm not sure. I mean, I think Henin was still a little bit more powerful, had a little bit more.
A little bit more dominant.
Yeah, I think so. And I think. And she
Can you call her a better version of Wozniacki when Wozniacki was number one in the world?
Yeah.
I think she's very consistent now.
Yes.
I think she gives herself an opportunity every match and every tournament to win it. And that's what she's about. And by sheer numbers, by doing it over and over again, she will win titles. But things need to work out for her. You know, can she raise her level to take it from the player that's super hot for those 2 weeks? That's the key.
But
Sharapova had that. Williams has that.
Yeah.
You know, Pliskova, for example, has that big enough game where she can just take it out of someone's hands. So, you know, I don't know about Halep in that way. Only her defense can do that.
But then you look at it like that's today's a match where she's got to win that match. I don't care what you got to do is you got to take care of that and win your second, you know, big tier title in a row and move on to New York. And now it kind of, because I think the other main difference between a player like Halep and somebody like Justine Henin was Halep still has those demons that she's wrestling with. You know, like, am I good enough? Am I not good enough? And that's where Darren Cahill has done a great job of micromanaging her. But I still think that that's kind of, you know, who she is. And something she's going to have to get through. But she's obviously doing a much better job based on her results. But anyways, I mean, you know, great effort by Kiki to win today. And let's see what happens in New York. I mean, What do we look like? Let's talk about Serena, right? I mean, what did she do? She lost second round, and this was, we talked about this in the preview show last week, right? A tournament she has to do well in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Kvitova, 1 week too late with my Kvitova pick. Kvitova makes the semis. But what do you think? I mean, can we really, do we read that much into this Serena loss or not?
No, because I watched it, and that
okay.
makes a difference.
Okay.
Kvitova really served well.
Okay.
And Serena wasn't serving as well as her.
Okay.
That was ultimately the difference.
All right.
When the points got going, Serena was actually, I thought, the better player on the ground.
Okay.
But it was her serve that was just, Kvitova was something I you know, reminded me of her Wimbledon championship matches where she just would step up, hit second serve aces, just down on big points, always her best serves came. When Kvitova is playing like that on a fast court, I mean, she's just very difficult to play against. So I didn't see her semifinal match. I didn't see what happened. But, you know, there's you know, Kvitova was playing well. And Serena's not obviously in top form yet, but she's building that way. So I think she'll be a tough out at the Open.
I think so. And I think one thing we got to also keep in mind is even though she made the finals of Wimbledon, losing to Kerber, I think, you know, grass is such a specialized surface that not a lot of people can really play on it. But when you have a situation at the U.S. Open, a lot of people are really good on hard courts. And you know everybody's going to be giving it everything they got with the final real big tournament of the season coming up in a couple weeks. So I think, but the only thing I'm afraid of for Serena is, you know, she's still ranked somewhere in the mid-20s, right? So she's going to have a tough draw. You know, she might play Muguruza third round. You know what I mean? Like, she might play Halep third round. So there's going to be a lot of early obstacles for her. In a way, it could be good. But in a way, you know, if you play somebody like a Kvitova again, who's serving the lights out, that lefty, you know, crazy serve, that's going to be tough. But I think it's going to be, especially on the women's side, going to be a lot of compelling storylines. And especially if Serena can get it going. And so before we get into, you know, next week's show, what do you, you know, who would you say is your top three favorites on the women's side after now the summer is pretty much gone? But saying that, Connecticut has a pretty good draw. I think Halep is playing. I mean, there's some serious players still in that tournament, which is very surprising for me the week before a major, right, that you have, you know, you have some of the top players, top women.
The number one player in the world. It's
yeah.
crazy.
Halep's playing, Garcia's playing. So right now, Parsa, in Connecticut, you got Halep, Garcia, Kvitova, Pliskova, Georges. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 top 10 players playing the week before a major. That's, I mean, Kiki's playing as well too. We got Radwanska, we got Sakari, you know what I mean? Strykova, Sibulkova, Coco Vandeweghe, Makarova. There's, you know, some good players in this tournament, man. And I think that, you know, Barty has withdrawn as a 16th player in the world. This is ready to go. For me, if I'm Halep, I withdraw from this tournament. That's my personal, I don't know why she's playing 3 weeks in a row. I mean, she's played max matches, right? She played max matches in Montreal, won it. Max matches in Cincy, has a match point, loses in the finals. Why do you play 3 weeks in a row? Get into New York, go relax a little bit, have some good food. You know what I mean? Walk around, do a little bit of shopping, get on Arthur Ashe, get ready for Monday.
I think it's a little bit different on the women's tour, Nima.
No.
The men, you have to physically be prepared, best of five.
Yeah.
In that way. For the women, I think you have to be mindset prepared and emotional prepared. And what I mean by that is that if you have too much time, you start to think.
I agree.
In a negative way. So if you're Halep and you're on fire and she gets to the final again of Connecticut, she's probably going to get to the final of the Open again. You know, it's like she just is confident in what she's doing instead of sort of taking time off. And then that first, because a lot of the women are also vulnerable in the first two rounds. You know, once they get going, the tennis starts to pick up and you can be able to tell on the women's side, like who's got a full steam ahead, you know, who's struggling a little bit. You know, but in the first couple of rounds, anything can happen. So, and I think for players who have to play matches, it's a good idea. And for the ones that need the rest, that's a better idea, obviously.
Yeah, and then when you look at somebody like Darren Cahill, I got a lot of respect for him. You know he's not making that move. Like, he's not doing anything with her that he's not really thinking about. The guy knows what he's doing. You got to call it what it is. And then you're completely right. I mean, if Darren Cahill thinks that his player should play the week before a Grand Slam, then that's what they're going to do. So for whatever reason, physically, mentally, just get her out of New York and, you know, get her ready to go. So, we'll see how it transpires. But anyway, so who are you taking as your top three right as of today?
Yeah, I would say Halep, Serena Williams. And my third is going to be, it's going to be difficult for me to pick a third. But I think it's going to be a wild card type person. And what I mean by that is like a Pliskova. Someone like with that sort of thing. Speaking of that, you know who disappoints me and who I had, I think, winning the tournament was Madison Keys, Nima.
She's been injured again though, right? She's had some problems.
Yeah, but it's like, it's too much, you know? I didn't have her winning. I had her losing to Ostapenko in the semi, but you know, I was just surprised with her. I feel like she's a better player than she displays, and she gets all the attention at the Open. And is she prepared to make a deep run? Because she could do a lot for herself and for her career at the U.S. Open.
How about Sabalenka, pardon me. I mean, she was absolutely, big girl, hammering the ball, had some really good wins. Beat Pliskova, Garcia. I mean, she was ready to... Madison Keys, she beat Keys as well. I don't think Svitolina is going to do much. I don't think Azarenka is going to do much. I don't think Sharapova is going to do much at the U.S. Open. I think Serena definitely has a chance. I think Halep has a chance. And I'm kind of right there with you, man, because when I look at, you know, there's like from a top three perspective, like who do you really go for? And can it be maybe? I don't think Kvitova can do it either. Maybe, you know, I would definitely say for me, I'm going to go with Halep, Serena, and Sloane Stephens as my top three. I think Sloane playing all right, man. I mean, she played pretty good both weeks. I think she gets up for majors as she's shown in the past. Do I think she's going to win the U.S. Open? She has a chance, man. It would be amazing if she wins it for her, because that's a serious accomplishment to defend your first Grand Slam title, and it's your home title, and you got a lot of press and media and sponsors behind you because you won the tournament. You know, Nike, she's the only player they're really promoting in their ads. you know, she's you know, with Head, and she's got a lot of other, you know, sponsors that are really behind her. So I think that she's probably going to all be on all the billboards in NYC, you know, trains and everything. So we'll see how it goes down, but it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to the women's side for sure. But, you know, as we move now to the men's, I mean, you know, Djokovic, it's interesting. I mean, men's tennis is in an interesting time because we keep hoping that, you know, will it be maybe a TFO's Zverev final today? Not even close. Is it, you know, Tsitsipas showed us something last week, but he flamed out this week. And, you know, it's interesting, Parsa. I was mentioning this to a friend of mine this morning. Do you know what he said after he lost to Goffin in his first match? He goes, I lost today. This is, I'm paraphrasing. He said, I lost today. Physically, I was fine. But mentally, I really didn't care if I lost this match. And that really worried me a lot. I'm like, what do you mean you didn't care? If you, do you know what I'm saying? No, listen. First and foremost, man, awesome for being honest.
Yeah,
love absolutely. The guy. He's a great kid. He's a great kid. I get it. You know? And but at the end of the day, like, okay, I get it. Like, you're being honest. Cool. But you're still, like, why? Like, what's happening that you're even, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I mean, I can actually explain that. That's because he's in a euphoric state still.
Yeah.
Emotionally.
Yeah.
So, you know, he did something tremendous. He just turned 20 years old. He's like, he basically just saw that he's going to make it in this sport. And he's just through the moon. He probably partied a night afterwards, and then all of a sudden he's got to play his next round, and
and then you're done.
I think he was fine physically, like he said, and he probably just mentally wasn't ready to compete yet. He probably needed like a couple more days to let it all soak in and then regroup and get back on the court and find a rhythm. But you know, that's the way tennis is. It's like you played Sunday, you play Tuesday, in a different country. That's the way it is, but I look at him as a potential top 12 type favorite at the Open.
Yeah. Well, he's up to 15, so he's going to have a serious seat. You know, a lot of people are going to be looking at him. He's also got the look with the hair and the beard and the height and the clothes, and he's a flashy guy. He's a nice guy. He's very endearing as well. He's got kind of like the Del Potro vibe to him, a little bit laid back, but, you know, deadly ground strokes and shots and everything, so... I mean, I definitely want to see one of these young guys, preferably an American, you know, like a Fritz or a TFO or, you know, somebody like that, or even a Khachanov or a Rublev make the semis. But I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's just hard, Nimala, you know?
It's just hard because you got these guys, 37-year-old Federer. I mean... Do I think
and over the best of five, it's the savvy wins.
Yeah.
The true professional who's been there for a long time finds a way in the big moment to make it happen.
Exactly. Like, do I think Federer is going to win the U.S. Open? I don't. Do I think that he can make the semis? Yes. Do I think Djokovic might win the U.S. Open? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to lose before the semis? Absolutely not. Do I think Nadal is going to make the semis? Can he win it? Second favorite after Djokovic now, first, second. We'll get into that too because I think you have some interesting thoughts on that. But that's three of the four right there. And then who's the fourth guy? This is all obviously, you know, pending on what the draw looks like because Djokovic is still going to have a lower seed. I mean, Zverev, maybe not. Maybe Anderson again. Maybe Cilic. But it's not going to be a young guy. I don't think so. I don't think Shapovalov is ready. I don't think TFO is going to do it. I don't think a guy like Felix is even remotely ready yet. I don't know. Anyways, but getting to the match.
At least what's exciting about it, Nima, is that it's coming. You can see it coming.
But we've been saying that also for a while. We've been saying this for a while that it's coming, but now it's actually coming.
Yeah.
Like, it's like when you know, is it going to rain? And
there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. You can see, like you said, Shapovalov, I don't think he's ready, but you can see Shapovalov playing the match of his life and taking out somebody huge. You know what I mean?
Which would be cool to see, for sure. And no better place to do it than in New York.
Yeah.
But, so what did you think of the match today? I mean, it was pretty comprehensive by Djokovic, to be honest. It was 4-4, but it wasn't a tough match. I mean, he dominated Federer from the baseline. Fed really didn't serve well. You know, as I bring up some of the...
was also the best returner in the world. There's a lot of pressure there.
Yeah.
You know, Djokovic is definitely dominant off the ground. And then the faster court actually favored Djokovic because he can actually hold the serve relatively easily compared to other surfaces. And so,
I mean, if I'm breaking down a little bit of the stats here, Fed did have 11 aces, which is a pretty relatively high number for him. Djokovic with four, Federer with four doubles. But for me, the stat here with his serving stats were terrible. Federer, 68% first serve percentage. You rarely see that by him in a two-set match. And then only 67% of his first serve points won, 47% of his second serve points won. And he lost the serve three times, broke once. And I mean, he was only he only returned 29% of Djokovic's first serves and 22% of his second serves. I mean, that to me, and then, I mean, Djokovic won 53% of the points when Federer was serving his second serve, broke him three times, won 71% of his first serve and 78% of his second serves. That to me, man, is a lopsided win, to be honest with you. Like, I don't think that's an hour and 24 minutes. I don't think it was that close of a match.
It was comprehensive.
Yeah, I think. And then we're not even talking about the baseline rallies, which I think Djokovic almost doubled Federer in point. It was like 30, I don't know, 35, 36 to 18 or something like that. So
that's why if he's not hitting his spots, he's got no chance.
Yeah.
You know, and I think at the Open and best of five, I just don't think Federer can win it.
No. I think it's too physical. I think Federer maybe can. I don't know. I mean, you know what? It's interesting because we're always in the moment, you know? And yep. It feels like Toronto was 2 years ago, but it was only last Sunday. And Nadal played amazing. You know, he's playing early and serving it really well and, you know, returning really well, moving well. He's fit. And now he's rested. You know, he's been chilling a little bit, right? Like, I know he put up something today on Twitter, you know, on Instagram. I'll see you guys at Arthur Ashe Kids Day. But what's he really been up to? He hasn't put up any videos of training. You know that he's just getting some massages.
Do you know where he is, even?
I have no idea. Do you know?
Nope.
No, I don't know. I don't think he's in the States yet. No. You know what? He's actually, I think he's somewhere in Europe. He's coming to New York. I think he's going to be in on Tuesday. So, you know, get that nice private jet fired up and he's going to get in. But I think definitely Nadal's going to be in good shape for the U.S. Open. Again, I think Djokovic top flight just because of the matchup is going to be tough. But I think Nadal, I mean, that Wimbledon match was amazing. I think he'll definitely push him. But Djokovic, to me, right now, my top three favorites, I'll go first this time, it's got to be Djokovic, Nadal. And then I really go to a distant third with Federer. And I mean, who else do you really put in there, man? Like, who am I going to put in there? Khachanov? Maybe Anderson, and I don't even know if I put maybe Zverev. I don't know if I even put Zverev in there, to be honest with you, man. Like, I don't think he's ready to. I don't think he's, you know, going to win the U.S. Open.
The only thing that can happen is one of those guys that you mentioned plays Federer, Nadal early, Djokovic,
yeah,
and somehow takes him out. But the Philip Kohlschreibers of the world are not beating those two guys, the top two guys this tournament. So, I mean, it looks like it's destined. You know, for me, on my three, it's going to be Nadal number one. And then it's Djokovic. And then I'm going to have a distant third as Federer. And the reason is because I feel like this is still Nadal's tournament in that he's the most consistent match to match. And I think Djokovic still goes up and down. I think he's almost there. He hits the incredible shots, but then he'll throw in, you know, 45 mile an hour second serves, and you're like, what's happening in his head? So as long as those demons still exist there and he doesn't have complete control over them, I don't think he'll dominate. But come 2019, Nima, I think that Djokovic is going to be, again, the best player in the world, and I think he's going to do it for 2 or 3 years. So look for him to add to the Grand Slam total and get on the Mount Rushmore of tennis. You know, but for the U.S. Open, I actually think this is Nadal in five here in the final.
Yeah, if that takes place. And you know what, Parsa? Nadal on the year, 5 titles, 40-3. Match record. I mean, there you go. And what I like, you know, just off the top of my head, what was his, you know, what did he lose there? I know he lost at Wimbledon semis, right? He lost to somebody on clay, right? He lost somewhere. No, he won Rome. Madrid, he lost to Team. That's his second loss. He won Barca. He won Monte Carlo. And then he had to withdraw against Cilic in the fifth set in Australia. So, I mean, that's an injury, right? That was unfortunate. The Team one, I mean, he's bound to lose one. I mean, that to me is not important, to be honest with you, because he completely rolled the clay court season. And then that Wimbledon semi was probably the match of the year. And it was so, and if you're basic, and he played amazing. So the match that he lost, he played really, really well. It's not like he got destroyed. So,
Right, or he wasn't prepared or something,
yeah. And so that said, the team won't forget about it. Cilic was injured. So he's really lost one match this year. And that was to Djokovic. He played out of his mind as well. So that's a great point. I mean, Nadal is right there. He's feeling good, and he's going to be fresh. Really good move to take off Cincy, and he's going to get down and do something. I mean, we're going to have to see what Delpo does. Got a guy like Nick Kyrgios. I know he's playing Fortnite and FIFA, getting ready for the U.S. Open. He's preparing as best as he can, and so
Crazy.
yeah. And but I mean, with the serve that guy had, I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable. I still say, Parsa, to this day, that Nick Kyrgios has the best serve in men's tennis right now. I mean, the guy is just off the charts. Like who has a more live arm than he does?
I don't know, and it's really it is incredible, and he can do all sorts of things, and then he mimics people
Yeah, and he still
in the
hits
middle of the
aces with
match.
those.
It's insane. How much talent is in that human being is incredible.
And it's one name, man. Hopefully he can put it together, right?
Yeah,
But
before he gets hurt, you know.
yeah,
Hopefully it
which
doesn't take a major injury to shape his mental game up.
yeah, we shall see.
You know,
But
sometimes you don't know what you have until it's gone, you know.
absolutely.
So
So, anyways, it was a good Cincy. It was a good hard court season. Lead up to the U.S. Open, and that leaves us with our podcast for next week, which we will do hopefully live together when I get down to New York. And with that said, Parsa and I will be back, as I mentioned, next Saturday to preview the U.S. Open championships, both women's and men's draws. In the meantime, for anybody looking to get down to the U.S. Open, make sure to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours, as they have some great packages and everything for you guys to watch the final Slam of the Year live. In the meantime, make sure to follow Parsa at ParsaSammy on Instagram and Twitter, as well as download this podcast on iTunes and follow us on Tennis Connected throughout this week coming up and the U.S. Open for all your previews, reviews, match gear, anything that you need. Thanks again, Parsa, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And everybody out there, have a great week, and let's get ready for NYC.